All right. Plaz, we found him. Plaz is on.
Plaz. Willie, hold on a second. I got to ask something. Did I not send you down to Orlando?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. I was there on official station business, George. I was not hanging out at Disney or anything like that.
You know, Willie, what I remember about that was that I had a phone conversation the week before with Kevin Stallings about an hour after the pairings had been released. I remember I was about to walk into a theater, and he and I are talking, and I'm out in the lobby, and I said, I got news for you. I said, NC State, you know, they were the better seed. I think they were a three seed.
They were three, yep.
And I said, they're badly overrated. And Kevin privately was like, I agree. If we get to that game, we got a real shot at them.
It was a heck of a game. And I thought it was over. They were down 11. It didn't look good at all. And then Matt Freege started hitting a couple of threes. He got hot, and then they made a couple of great plays at the end of the game. They just stormed by him. If I remember correctly, Gus Johnson was on the call to make things even more fun, because he's great with the drama the tournament and all that stuff. So that was a great time. So Plaz, great moment in Vanderbilt basketball history. Unfortunately, I don't know if you've noticed this, Vanderbilt is not in the tournament this year.
Yeah, they're not.
Yes, and to be honest about it, Willie, by about November the 10th, they had been eliminated.
Yes, it didn't help that they lost to, who was a Presbyterian in the first game?
Yeah.
So we know where they are now.
Is Mace going crazy?
Mace is very preoccupied right now. It is halftime.
Yeah, it's halftime now, George.
So you've got his undivided attention for about 12 more minutes until they tip it up for the second half.
Has Mississippi State put Tolu Smith in the witness protection program?
I don't know. The Spartans lead 31-24 at the half. BYU leads Duquesne 20-19. And D-Mace admitted earlier in the show, George, like I did, that I didn't know how to say Duquesne when I was a kid.
Yeah, didn't know how to say it.
Duquesne.
Duquesne.
Exactly.
I love it. That's awesome.
So, Plaz, you're like everybody else, playing hooky from school, from work. We had some fun stories that you would have enjoyed earlier in the show about people using the excuses to get around work. It seems like with the computer these days, there's a lot other ways. It's easier to figure out how to, hey, I got a Zoom meeting over here, or my math class, we're working on statistics, and we have a worksheet. We had a math teacher call in and say that's what he would do, and everybody just flips up their laptops and starts watching the game. So I think it's a little easier to cheat than it used to be.
If you remember, Willie, we took the afternoon before the NCAA tournament one year, and we asked people to call in with what excuse they would use to, you know, get out of work kind of stuff. And we got some, you know, I've got flu, I've got sweaty palms. And then at the end, somebody called in and said, here's one they won't challenge, explosive diarrhea.
That did come up, you know, something that's so ridiculous that nobody even wants to know what.
Right.
They don't even want to know if you're telling the truth or not. What was the one, D-Mace, we had in the first hour? I'm trying to go back through the text line. Gluteal glaucoma.
Yeah.
So you can't see yourself being at work today.
That's a good one, though.
Yeah.
That's really a, what are they, like a, is that a double entendre or something?
I don't know what it is, but it's a damn good reason not to go to work, George.
Can't see my butt going to work today. Gluteal glaucoma. Yeah,
that's hilarious.
So,
meanwhile, back to Vandy.
Yeah. So, what do you think is the approach here? You've got Candace Story Lee at the women's tournament, as she should be. Big win for them last night, getting that program back on their feet after going through some really tough times. Shea Ralph has really got them moving in the right direction. Now she's got this hire for basketball, which has slipped. Would you say, Plaz, I mean, they were on the verge last year. I thought they should have been in the tournament last year. I didn't think they got any breaks at all. And you have Tom Izzo today saying, I'd like to see some more coaches on the committee. I think if CM Newton or coaches like him that used to be a bigger presence on the committee were there, I think that might have helped Vanderbilt's case. But nonetheless, they don't make it. and then they crater this year, and here they are. So is this about as low as you've seen the program slip? Of course, recently you had Bryce Drew had the winless season, but that happened so suddenly.
Yeah, it's the lowest that I have ever seen it. And I would use a couple of factors. Memorial Gym, it breaks my heart when I walk in there and see what I saw this year. And ultimately, there are a couple of things that kept happening. Number one, players roll out of Jerry's system, you know, on and on and on. So he never retains anybody. And then if you look at the list of people he brought in this year, anybody who saw the Presbyterian game knew, oh, Lord, they're in deep doo-doo. Because what they had were a bunch of mid-majors as far as level of talent and two really good guards. Ezra Mannion, who I will contend is the only positive thing Jerry Stackhouse did in 5 years, was bring us that wonderful kid. And then Tyron Lawrence, who played most of the year with a bad attitude, sulked. He was the guy getting all the money NIL-wise, and yet, you know, he certainly was no leader. And so what you had was this cast of misfits, a round peg in a square hole. And, you know, as the season evolved, Van Allen Lubin became serviceable. The kid that has the most athletic ability on that team is Jason Rivera-Torres, and he buried him at the end of January, and we never saw him again.
And now he's in the portal.
Kid, yeah. He's a kid that whoever the new coach is needs to try to say, will you at least meet with me before you bolt?
Yeah.
Because that kid's going to play for somebody, and he's going to be pretty good.
He's got some talent, no question. So that's kind of where they are. I think they have almost the entire team probably sitting there going, is the grass greener on the other side? Who's the next coach? You can now go into the portal, and you can still go back to where you were, and you have no coach in there right now telling anybody, if you go into this portal, you can't come back. That is what some schools do, but there's no coach. So there's nothing keeping anybody from going to the portal. So in theory, they don't have a single player that is committed to coming back next year. This new coach is going to have to start from scratch. So where do you think they're going with the search? Let me start off with the name Chris Mack. You tell me what you think of him, because he's the one sort of established guy that for a couple of different reasons has been sitting there as a guy that's got a big track record of success at the major college level.
First of all, I'd be just fine if that's who they walk in with. You know, I hear a lot of this. We need to go get a sitting Power Five coach. Well, great. Good luck. Have at it. You know, that's dealing in the old days of 15,000 at Memorial Gym and, you know, great home court advantage and, that day has come and gone for right now. They are one of the two worst teams in the league. It's a completely messed up deal. I mean, whoever gets the job has to be a CEO. And Chris Mack at Xavier proved to be a very effective CEO. 9 NCAA appearances in 12 years, and I'm not convinced they can do any better than Chris Mack. That's not me necessarily endorsing him, but he's the name that's an obvious one that has to be there near the end.
George, is this Vandy job a good job to take? Because we've seen over the last 7 years, both coaches that have proceeded Stallings haven't done well. They may have had some recruits here and there, but for the most part, it hasn't gone well, with the exception of Jerry Stackhouse's season last year. And it was just unfortunate they didn't get into the dance. But is this a good job that other coaches are looking at and are eager to take?
I think they're very wary of it. I think if people are honest, and very seldom are you going to get a coach to say, I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole. But I know privately, that's the way a lot of them are looking at it right now. There's one particular name that is out there, and I'm going to stay away from using the name, but a good friend of this coach who is down in Florida somewhere told me he's not touching it. And I think that's one of the problems they run into, is that it is not what it used to be. And it's not one of these things where some sitting Power 5 head coach is going to go, oh, Vandy's open, where do I apply? It doesn't work like that.
Now, what would make this job attractive? Because I would say 10 years ago, what would make any job attractive is if the athlete walks in and the facilities are top-notch, they have everything they need on campus, and that's how you're recruiting them. You show them a few trophies, and then they're eager to come. They want to be a part of it. But now, fast forward, we know that, listen, it's not just the facilities that are going to get these, and we're talking 4- and 5-star athletes, whether it be men or women. That's not getting them in alone. You have to do something else to entice these individuals to come to your university.
Yeah, it's called money. Mm-hmm. And the narrative that's been put out there, which is such a load of crap, is that poor old Jerry, you know, he wasn't privy to help in the NIL. Well, yeah. You know, part of that is you have to engage your former players. They're the most likely people to want to help you. Jerry Stackhouse had zero relationship with former players. And in the end, when she looked around to see who supports Jerry Stackhouse, the only person that I could find publicly was Shane Foster. Other than that, the former players wanted nothing to do with Jerry Stackhouse. They were fed up with him. And a lot of it was this standoffish attitude. None of them knew him. And so right there, this whole, well, Jerry wasn't privy. No, Jerry was too lazy to go out and cultivate. The next coach needs to fully understand that the former players are a resource that they've got to tap into immediately. Because the truth of it is, about 90% of the former players in hoops really want to help.
Interesting. I you know how this works, George. We've learned over the years how some of the searches work and how a search firm or a representative will have a meeting with a coach, and the coach is going to have some questions for them. I would think number one on the list would be, what's my NIL situation here? I am told, though, that they have a pretty decent amount of money. You know, maybe not the top in the SEC. They're probably never going to have that. But they have a competitive amount of NIL money to offer. Because that would be my first thing. If I want this job, I would need to know that, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, look, to where Derek was going, if I'm a candidate for the Vanderbilt job, and there's a part of me that wants it, the first thing I'm doing is picking up the phone and calling Kevin Stallings and saying, help me to understand some things. You got to 7 NCAA tournaments in 17 years. And after you left, they were like 1-for-8. Yeah. Okay? Bryce Drew's first year, they went, and they've never been back since. To try to get, you know, I would want to know from Kevin, is this possible? I mean, he's a logical person to reach out.
He'd be a great sounding board, no question.
Eddie Fogler would be the other one that are obvious. I mean, you have to be a dimwit not to think in those terms if this is a job that you're going after. You've got to be told, look, you're going to have to be a salesman, not only when it comes to NIL, but we got to get Memorial Gym back. And I can't name you one thing Jerry Stackhouse ever did in 5 years to help that. I mean, I read that deal, you know, and it's the typical, you know, we wish the person the very best. We're thanking Jerry for all these great moments of Memorial magic. Give me a break. There were none.
Not
what he brought, his Memorial magic was, gosh, we've got more empty seats here than we've ever seen. Why are we thanking him?
Trying to be cordial.
Right thing to do.
All right, so let's look ahead. Okay, I want to ask you the question, George. I go way back with you.
You're having fun with this, aren't you?
Oh, yes. So I joined you in 1993 after Vanderbilt lost Eddie Fogler, right? It was a few months after that whole fallout. National, not SEC, but National Coach of the Year. SEC regular season championship, Sweet 16. He goes to South Carolina largely because Vanderbilt fumbled the ball and didn't do what they needed to do to keep him. And that had everybody kind of up in arms. But from that day, right, I've seen a couple of different coaching searches, and it seems like every time somebody would call the show and say, what about Don Meyer? What about Rick Byrd? And today's version of that is Casey Alexander, right?
Sure.
A very, very successful Belmont program for decades. And at the time, Lipscomb, of course, Casey had a great run at Lipscomb for a brief period of time. But the sense that I've always gotten from Vanderbilt is it's kind of like, well, we wouldn't go there to find the coach. The grass is greener as you go further away. And I really do hope that they look at Casey and look at him sincerely, right? Because I think there's been phone calls before. I think they've called Rick Byrd before, but it hasn't really been with their heart in it. So what do you think of Casey as a potential candidate here?
Well, first of all, I think it's where the school, bless its heart, wants to tell you how smart they are. But when that attitude is really ignorant, it really is. Casey Alexander is a guy that they need to give serious consideration to for obvious reasons. Number one, he's a very good basketball coach. Secondly, and I don't know this, it's possible that he's sitting there going, ooh, this Missouri Valley Conference thing, this might be a little harder than everybody thought.
And yet they've done well. They've done well in that transition.
Yeah, they have. But, I mean, it's hard to say they're going to be in the NCAA tournament five times in the next 8 years because that's a really tough league.
Yes.
So that coupled with the fact that he grew up in Nashville, he's grown up around kind of the Vandy basketball knowledge, and so he knows what some of the problems are. He doesn't need a tutorial on here's why we're where we are.
I agree with you. I think his knowledge of the history of the program is worth something, and his value of the city of Nashville would be valuable. I will tell you, George, that when I was younger, and people may or may not believe this, but George could tell you, I was a little cocky, right? I was probably the snob kind of guy that would said we would never go at Vanderbilt and get Belmont's coach or Lipscomb's coach. Why would we ever do that? I was that guy. There's no question I was. But I do think I've evolved a lot since then. And I think I've come around. I'm being honest, right? I do think sometimes I wasn't alone, though, and I think a lot of Vanderbilt people would say, we're not going to go to Belmont to get our coach. That's settling for something that's second best. But I do think you've got to respect a lot more, and I've come to respect a lot more of what Belmont's. Of course, they've gone Division I, and they've had a ton of success since I used to think back in the day. But sometimes I think we overlook a really good coach, and you say, well, this coach over at Colgate or this coach at whatever, he must be better, and because it's from afar. You know what I mean?
The guy from Colgate doesn't even know where this place is. And I heard Derek laughing in the background. Derek, I used to get all over Willie when I first hired him. I swear to you, he did not know anything past about a 1 mile radius of that camp. And I absolutely blistered him one day. I was like, there's a lot more going on than just in your little bubble.
The Vanderbilt bubble.
So, Derek, there was also the, I can't be on the air when they're playing.
Oh, I remember that story, and, yes.
And so when the Predators made the run to the Stanley Cup, I called Willie one day. I said, are they aware that you can't do any work if Vandy's playing? And Willie was like, you're still going to use that on me? Oh, I was like, oh, yeah.
It's coming.
Way too much fun.
Well, Plaz, we gotta get to a break. But
well, sure you do.
You know how this works.
Yes, I do.
But we'll circle back on this as this search continues. I think you and I are both very intrigued to see where this goes. I do think there will be really good candidates that they have the opportunity to get. And I think you and I are both in agreement that if they answer the right questions with NIL and bring a good package to the table, this can be an attractive job, but they've got a lot of work to do.
Okay, I'll leave you with this last piece of negativity. In the history of basketball, no coach has gotten more and deserved less than Jerry Stackhouse. This man's getting a $21 million buyout, for God's sakes.
Yeah. He's done okay. Yeah. He's done okay. He'll be all right. All right.
Yeah, no telethons. See ya.
Plaz, you have games to watch. We'll talk. Good luck in your bracket. Gifts to the people.
Thank you.
George Plaster, everybody. He's got his George Plaster show. You can watch it. He goes live from 2 to 4 every day, but you can pick it up anytime you want on the Twitch, the Twitter, the YouTube channel, the social media. You'll see it. The George Plaster show, very, very good stuff. You guys know my history with him, his history here at our station. We're behind. We got to get back on track here. We'll get you a scoreboard update in a moment. Stay tuned. You're listening to 102.5 The Game.
Come on,
oh yeah, D Mace is dialed in.
Right.
He wants to see the Spartans advance and get a chance at the Tar Heels of North Carolina. They are the number one seed that awaits the winner of Michigan State, Mississippi State. Although North Carolina is going to have to get by Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, we found out last year, you never know. The 16 seed can win. For years and years, I watched this tournament. I was like, it's never going to happen. It's not going to happen.
I will say, D-Mace, congratulations on the win. I'm conceding with 15 minutes.
It's not over.
It's not over.
Don't give up.
It's
not over.
I'm conceding.
Conceding.
But that wave of green is
you're just
green
trying
is
to butter
at
up. You're trying to soften up D-Mace.
I'm just, right now, if I would just accept
you can't make free throws either.
Yeah, if I just accept the loss, like I feel like it softens the blow at the end of the day. Like I have something else to look forward to.
You know, I wouldn't really, and it's no fun, no picking at your team, Nick. But I didn't expect Michigan State to lose this game anyway. I was looking more so the next round's matchup, potential matchup, them in Carolina. Now, that's going to be the matchup I want to see.
Kind of like what we were talking about during the break about that professional environment when it comes mm-hmm. to teams that have been there before.
Exactly.
I mean, they've been to this tournament numerous amounts
they've
of times.
They've been the last 27 years.
Yeah, so like they know, I mean.
Has it been 27 years? He's won 17 straight or 27 straight? Because he was named head coach in 95.
Yeah, that's more than I've been alive in.
Yeah, 95. It's been 27 years.
Wow.
Yeah, he's been in the tournament just every year.
They haven't had a lot of coaching changes there.
No.
Judd Heathcote was there for a long time before
then
him.
And Izzo took the job, and he's been there damn near 30 years, if not.
Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 up in Tennessee to bet. Let's give you the scoreboard update, tell you what's going on. As we were speaking, Mississippi State has gone on a little mini run, a 5-0 run, and the Spartans try to answer, but Mississippi State does have the ball. 14-15 to go. Michigan State 43, Mississippi State 34. But it's hard to end a team's season. And now they just got an and one. So right after Nick concedes, see, I see what
still,
you're doing.
Still conceding.
You're trying to. I know what you're trying to do. It's psychological. I've tried this. I've tried this. Just like Larry David, he's on to you when you do that. You're trying to soften up D-Mace so he lets his guard down. and Mississippi State sneaks back into the game. So now it's 43-36. It's now halftime at, where is this game being played? I don't even know. Duquesne leads BYU in the 11-6. It's the East Regional. 38-30 is the score. And Duquesne came in having been on a roll, had to win the conference tournament just to get in. Akron is underway against Creighton. Akron leads 11-8 over on TNT. And the next game that gets tipped off here in about 20 minutes or so is Long Beach State against Arizona. Long Beach State with Dan Monson, who they were mutually deciding to part ways, and then they've reunited like Peaches and Herb because they won the tournament and got in. So that will be an intriguing one to keep your eye on. So earlier today, Padres held on and beat the Dodgers in Korea to get the split. Those games do count, by the way. Those were actually the opening games, but the big story is on Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter that has now quit his job. And the Ohtani representatives say he stole from Ohtani. Gambling debts at the center of this. It's very, very complicated. I'm really curious how this story plays out over the next couple of days. Michigan State now has gone up. Ooh, is our TV behind? What's going on here? I'm seeing a score on my score sheet that Derek will like, and I'm not seeing it on the... Oh, no, they just put it on the wrong team is what they did. 45-37 is the score right now.
Mississippi State just hit a three-pointer. For those of you who are not in front of a television.
For some reason, my ESPN...
Yeah, that's always behind. Yeah, the ESPN is always behind for some reason. Whether it's basketball, football, they're always just like a minute or two behind. Okay.
It's not as it's usually more, I would think, more in sync than it is. But nonetheless, 47-37 is the score. Okay, here's what we're going to do. When we come back, we're going to check in South Florida. The Predators have a huge game tonight against the Panthers. You talk about a great test. Now, they have been passing some tests, let me tell you. During this 15-game point streak, they've won against Colorado. They've won in L.A. They've won in Vegas. They've won in Winnipeg. Now they go to Florida. Can they keep it going? If they win, it would make their win streak the highest ever in franchise history, 16 games. But to do it, they'll have to beat one of the best teams in the NHL. So on that, we'll come back on the other side. We'll talk to Max Hurst, who's down there. He was at the morning skate. He's doing his radio coverage for 102.5 The Game down there. Why am I here in the studio? It's on ESPN Plus tonight. So to watch the game, that's where you would watch it. You could always listen to it here on 102.5 The Game. Stay tuned. We're coming back with more right after this. Is this Max Herz's theme song?
Oh,
is
yeah.
That what's going on here?
It's in Florida, baby.
Can we document that he had a cheeseburger for lunch today with Hal Gill and Pete Weber?
He might tell us now.
Okay, well, let's find out. The Predators are in South Florida tonight to take on the Panthers. 94 points on the year for the Panthers. They're outstanding, the defending Eastern Conference champion, and formerly the place where Andrew Nett became a head coach for the first time. On an interim level, he led them to the President's Trophy. So a lot going on tonight. Can the Predators get their point streak to 16? Let's see if we can find that out. Max Hurst is down there. Our coverage will begin later today at 5 o'clock, I believe. Is that correct, Max?
5:30
tonight. So 6:30 start?
Yes.
Ish? Okay. Good to know. So, Max, you were at the morning skate this morning. First of all, any news and notes on lineup changes or anything like that?
The Preds did rush the forward lines that they use for the majority of the game last game, which did have one change. Jason Zucker will play with Luke Evangelista and Colton Sissons, and Anthony Bevilier switched places with Evangelista to play with Tommy Novak and Mark Jankowski. They went with that most of last game. It was the first change they'd had since Bevilier and Zucker joined the team, and those were the lines they flashed this morning. So looks like that's what they'll roll with, at least at the beginning tonight. And also Kevin Lankinen will be in goal.
Lankinen and goal is an interesting story, and I do think that was probably maybe overlooked. I know it took us a couple of shifts to realize it was, permanent within the game, is splitting Zucker and Beauvillier, putting them on separate lines, and it seemed to work. Zucker, in particular, had a great game against the Sharks, and maybe being on the left side is easier for him to do his thing?
Yeah, I think that may have something to do with it, and it's a bump up in ice time for Evangelista, too, so he certainly deserves the extra ice time. I thought maybe in the first half of that game, Evangelista, Novak, and Jankowski weren't creating as much as they had been, but it was kind of a down first half of the game for the entire Preds group on Tuesday, and then they end up scoring 7 in a row. So no reason to unchange what you changed when that happens, right?
Yeah, it is, Max. Now, why this game is Lankinen in the net as opposed to UC Saros? Saros has been playing great. Lankinen has been playing really good as well. But why did they choose to? Why do you believe they choose to go with Lankinen instead of Saros this game, considering who the opponent is?
Yeah, I don't have a firm answer for you, D-Mace. Mm-hmm. Andrew Brunette has said a couple of times this week he was asked why Saros on Tuesday in his pregame press conference, and then today in his press conference was asked why Lankinen, and he's basically just said we're staying on schedule. So goalie coach Ben Vanderklok lays out the goalie schedule, and over the 2 years that Lankinen's been the backup, and to specifically look at this season as well, since you've had a different head coach this year, but it's really Ben Vanderklok who makes most of the schedule, and the coach will have some input, but the goalie coach gets to do most of that stuff and obviously will bounce it off of them. But it's been mostly road starts for Lankinen outside of back-to-backs. So I think they like Lankinen as the road warrior more and want to make sure they have Saros in there to defend home ice as much as they can. So I think that's maybe the reason why, but Lankinen just keeps getting these road starts against top teams in the NHL, and he wins more than half of them, which is incredibly impressive when you're really only playing once every 2 weeks.
Now, what do you expect to see out of this Predators team tonight? Because obviously people are deeming this a measuring stick game. Once again, they had one of those sort of games against Colorado. We see how they dominated Colorado. Its score ended up being, 4-2, 4-1, but it wasn't really that close. And now you have another game against Florida that many are saying a measuring stick game. But what do you expect to see out of the Predators tonight?
Yeah, the Panthers are really, really good. And Brunette has said multiple times this week this is the most likely team in the NHL to win the Stanley Cup, and obviously he knows much more than I do, but I would tend to agree even without having heard him say that. He knows this group so well. He was an assistant coach here. He was the interim head coach here 2 years ago, and this is his first time back coaching against the Panthers in Florida as a head coach since they chose not to retain him after his great year as the interim head coach. So it's a money on the board game. It's a big-time money on the board game for the head Fred and 15-game point streak going, playing for your head coach in a game that you know you need for him. There's going to be a lot of extra motivation for the Preds coming into this one, in addition to the fact that they want to prove that they can run with the biggest of big dogs, or I guess for the Panthers, the biggest of big cats down here, and show that they can compete with probably the best structural team in the NHL that gives up so little. They have three lines that would be a top line for most other teams. They have some bite on their fourth line with Nick Cousins, who we know. They've got a really solid decor, and they've got great goaltending. So they are the closest thing in the NHL right now to a 100% complete team. So this is going to be a great test for the Predators, who have been a full 18-man unit the last 4 weeks.
Yeah, and I was going to bring that up too, Max, in regards to now it seems like this team is a more balanced team, and you don't see that throughout the league. And we questioned at one point whether this was a balanced team or not because they were so top-heavy. But now it seems like they're getting contributions from the second, third, and even the fourth line. Do you expect this to continue as they move further on in the season?
You'd hope so. And if they're going to compete in the playoffs and first make the playoffs, that has to come first. But if they're going to keep this going and win the games they need to make it and then potentially compete in a first-round series against probably a division winner, the way the wild card format shakes up for you, they're going to have to get it from everybody. Because even if they're getting 2 goals a game from the top line, which has been the norm throughout a lot of the season, they're going to need more than that. They're probably going to need at least 3 or 4 goals a game to win. And they've gotten four goals a game throughout this 15-game point streak, and they've only won one game by a single goal. Every other game they've won by multiple. But you know in the playoffs it'll tighten up. They're going to need everything they can get. Every line has been good defensively as well, which is a massive, massive deal. So they're a deep team right now. Even though they're missing three defensemen, they've got everybody they can trust. There's no one they don't trust who's getting in this lineup. They found the lineup they like, and it's paid big dividends.
It looks like it will be a good test tonight for Delgado, going up against such a fierce team in Florida. So with that in mind, Max, you know, here in Nashville, it's not like it is in Toronto or New York with the media following. Florida, definitely not. They don't have a ton of media covering their team down there. The brunette coaching against the Panthers story, I would think, would be a huge story. With ESPN there tonight, what do you think they will do with that story?
Yeah, I think it's a big story for sure. And pretty much Bruno's entire press conference this morning, although there were not a lot of reporters there, but it was all about his time here. And we've heard him answer these questions before, Willie, about coaching against the Panthers or having the chance to be an interim coach and doing well, then becoming an associate head coach with the Devils last year, and now getting a chance to be a head coach again in this cycle for the first time without the interim label. So I know this means a ton to him. I remember it was surprising to a lot of people when it happened that the Panthers chose not to retain Andrew Brunette as their head coach when he coached 95% of the season and led them to the President's Trophy. And it's worked out for them. They got Paul Maurice, who's a great veteran coach. They went to the Cup final last year as the 8th seed. They're probably the Cup favorite if the playoffs started today this season. But it's a huge story for sure, and there's winners on both sides of this. I mean, both sides of that breakup are doing unbelievably well right now, and with both of them going head-to-head at their peaks, you know that's going to be front of mind for everybody with this matchup.
Do we know who the ESPN announcers are tonight?
Yes, it's Bob Wischusen and Kevin Weeks.
Okay, so good team. Kevin Weeks with some ties down there. And anything on the Panthers lineup? I know Aaron Ekblad has been out for them. I see Alexander Barkov, who is a true number one center. He has been banged up a little bit. Is he a go tonight?
We don't know for sure. It's kind of a weird situation for the Panthers right now because they haven't played since Saturday. But they've got two injuries to their two best players, and then also they have a suspension from a hit that happened almost a full week ago that doesn't start until tonight. So Dmitry Kulikov is suspended for this game for a dirty hit on Connor Sherry over the weekend. So they're down a defenseman. So Tobias Bjornfoot is going to make his Panthers debut, who is a peer of Sam Fagimo and Jared Anderson Dolan in that he's a good prospect, but he was a casualty of the Kings just having so many. So he's played for three teams this year. He's going to make his Panthers debut on the third D pair tonight. And we don't know about Barkov. He may play, may not play. I'm actually just seeing now it may not be Bjornfoot who plays. So don't listen to me about the third pair defense on the other team thing. But Tkachuk will play. Barkov, game time decision. And that's obviously a huge absence for the Panthers because, as I said, their strength is defensive structure and shutting teams down and eliminating puck possession. And Barkov, their captain, is the best defensive forward in the NHL.
The Panthers give up the second fewest goals per game in the entire NHL, 2.41. So they are very, very stingy. And, oh, by the way, they score 3.26. So they've got the offense to go with it. Max, really good stuff. Thanks for joining us, and have a great broadcast tonight.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
5:30 for the start of Max's coverage. Pete and Hal on the call from South Florida tonight. The Predators taking on the Panthers. Can they get the streak to 16? We shall see. And we're going to talk more hockey in a moment with Elliot Friedman. We're going to ask Elliot. We're going to put him on the spot. Where is Roman Josi right now in his mind in the race for the Norris Trophy? Roman Josi has been playing so well. 7 points in the last three games. 3 points the other night. Just taking the team to another level when they were behind 2-1. Two enormous plays in each of the last two wins at Winnipeg and then at Seattle. He is playing really, really well. To quote Barry Trotz, he's the best defenseman on the planet right now. Let's give you a quick scoreboard update. D-Mace is feeling pretty good. Michigan State has grown the lead to 15, 60-45, 7:38 to go in the second half, trying to eliminate Nick Frazier's beloved Mississippi State Bulldogs. The Spartans doing their thing. They've really led throughout in this game.
Yeah, they've had control of this game throughout. They haven't trailed in this game at all, and it seems like they're wearing Mississippi State down just a tad bit. They're a little lax on their defense every once in a while, but it seems like they tend to pick it back up once the score starts to shrink a little bit. So I'm looking at my Spartans. Go green, go white. We're looking to defeat Mississippi State and move on to the next round.
Move on to the next round. You guys got it. Yeah. Look at North Carolina.
There's still 7 minutes left, Nick. Come on.
Stop it.
Still 7 minutes left.
Duquesne and BYU are underway in the second half. Duquesne led 38-30 at the half. They just had a play for a rebound on the first possession of the second half, and they had a scrap. It was like a jump ball. Two guys went after it, playing hard, and then it got feisty. Everybody kind of huddled up, tempers flared. And I guess they got to go to the replay here and see what happened. This is one of those. I mean, they were battling for this loose ball. It was one of those where it was a tie-up. It was a jump ball, but nobody wanted to give away the ball, and they just kept going after it on the floor. So we'll see what happens with that. And Akron and Creighton are tied at 27. The 14 seed Akron zips, even with the 3 seed Creighton, with 7:22 in the first half. Tennessee fans will be watching very closely at that one. When we come back, Elliot Friedman joins us. We'll have our weekly chat with him going around the NHL. Stay tuned. We're coming back after this.